you'll be driven ultimately by what really gives you a warm and fuzzy feeling, what you really do have that passion about.
Welcome back to the Morning News.
Welcome back to the Morning Muse, your weekly interview podcast. We are joined by MC, television presenter, and public figure, Mr. Dan Nicol. How are you doing, sir?
I'm extremely well, Adrian. I'm freezing cold. It is a bitter morning in winter Johannesburg, but otherwise I'm doing well, and thank you for the honor of joining you on your podcast. Much appreciated.
It's actually been really chilly this side too, and I just want to take some time just to say thank you for getting some time out of your busy schedule to join us. You've presented for so long and you've inspired so many people with your work. And on behalf of everyone you've inspired, I just want to thank you.
It works both ways. There are many people as my career began to unfold who were able to point me in the right direction and give me some help and suggest where I wanted to try and be in terms of my life and my career. So if I can return that favor a little from time to time, then it's a very welcome opportunity.
That's just really true about giving someone the inspiration that you obviously got from someone else.
Yeah, very, very much so. I think I was lucky to grow up in a family with parents who were very open-minded and always supported me with everything I wanted to do, even if occasionally some of the ideas were a little daft. People who helped me along the road. I was very lucky when I was still at school, when I was 16, to get a scholarship to go on Rotary Youth Exchange and travel to Western Australia for a year, where I had the opportunity to discover a whole new world, a whole new culture. I also speak a lot, talk to Rotary clubs and school groups around Australia as I traveled. And that was a very big turning point for me, being able to suddenly have my horizons open up and realize that there was a lot more I wanted to do with my life. When you have opportunities like that, or you have people who facilitate them, then you really do owe it to them to take advantage of those opportunities and to work hard and to try and throw everything you can at them to get where you hope you will.
As we just begin, I obviously know who you are, but for the listeners, may you tell us a bit about who Mr. Dan Nicol is and where your love for television stemmed from?
If you ask my seven-year-old daughter, and unfortunately she told her school teacher this the other day, she said, "My daddy spends his day sitting in a room drinking wine," which didn't reflect terribly well on me. Part of what I do is a wine business and a wine show. I went to the University of Cape Town, and it was while I was there that I started working on the UCT radio station and started emceeing a few events around the varsity campus. And that led to an opportunity to work for Cape Talk, the talk radio station in Cape Town, as the name would suggest. And a couple of years after that, I got an opportunity to host Champions League television with ETV and did a season of that. But the television bug had bitten in a slightly different way a few years earlier. I mentioned I'd been in Australia for a year. While I was there, I had seen a show called The Footy Show, which focused on Australian rules football, which is a very strange, uniquely Australian sport with lots of men in very tight shorts charging around up and down a field, thumping each other. But it was entertaining to watch. And the show around this was a strange show because it had lots of humor and it was based on characters and entertainment rather than out and out sport. And that wasn't something I'd seen. And it sparked an idea. One day I'd like to do something similar. I filmed a pilot when I was in Cape Town, just out of university, for a show, thinking, right, this is it. I filmed it, away I go. I'll be rich and famous and a television superstar in weeks. Instead, it took me about 13 years to finally get what is now the Dan Nicol Show onto television. So it was a lot of hard work and patience and perseverance. But having seen that show, having decided I like television and this was something I really wanted to do, it was patience I was always going to have. And thankfully, we got the Dan Nicol Show up and running in 2015 on the Supersport platform through Africa. And we're currently on a production break, but in the first week of September, we'll start recording season 14. So it's been a lot more successful than anybody imagined, myself included. But it's been a great deal of fun, a lot of hard work, but it's been immensely rewarding.
Season 14.
My mother tells me it's 15 more seasons than she thought.
But I think that's really good about how you never envisioned it to be this good, but you continue to work, you continue to improve what you knew to help it continue growing.
I always felt that I had an idea that could work and that I had the ability to make it work. It was more that I just really wanted to get it on television as opposed to thinking, well, I wonder how long it will be there for. And the process has been one of evolution. But I think what's really struck me, and it's something I probably didn't fully appreciate the value of it's a celebrity talk show. And so you think, right, well, I need lots of famous people. But it's not really so much about the famous people. It's about the stories of those people. And quite often we'll have a show where one person might be a World Cup winner or an incredibly well-known singer or actor, but it's somebody who's not so well-known, who participates in a lesser sport or is slightly off the celebrity spectrum, who's got such an extraordinary story to tell, who often ends up being the star of the show. And I think over those 14 seasons, it's discovering people, the stories about them, who they are, and quite often the stories that they don't often get to tell. You might have somebody who's a fantastic footballer, but as well as being a fantastic footballer, she's really passionate about wildlife. And she can talk about football at great length and very competently and with great interest, but you ask her about wildlife and suddenly it's a very different passion. And so tapping into those passions, tapping into those stories, I think has been a big factor in allowing us to continue for as long as we have and build up the audience that we have.
That's really good. And that's something that you've done that really inspires me. And even with this platform, just a collaborative platform, hearing people's stories, with what you spoke about, did you always enjoy speaking and entertaining growing up?
I was born in Northern Ireland, but I grew up in Zimbabwe. And when I arrived in Kwekwe, which is where we started, my parents were teachers. They used to stick me up in front of the class and talk to the class. Nobody could understand a word I said because my Northern Irish accent was particularly strong. But they all laughed their heads off because they found it very funny. And I suspect that probably pushed me in that direction. It was always school plays and public speaking. And whenever there was a microphone required for some sort of event around school, then it was a space that I gravitated towards. And just I enjoy being around people. I enjoy laughing and sharing stories and the camaraderie that the lockdown of the world of the last 18 months has often eroded. And it's just a space I feel comfortable in, a space I enjoy. And I've been able to translate into a line of work that I just really revel in.
That's really interesting about how you've always liked speaking. You've always just seen the brighter side. And that's obviously helped your show reach the 15 seasons that it's on. It's been up for a really long time. And you doing so well in that. Have you had your, I think I've arrived moment?
Yes and no. I think the fact that it is on television, it has been on for a long time now. We've had some extraordinary guests. We've done some fantastic stuff. We've filmed shows from the Rugby World Cup and the Sevens in Hong Kong and the Laureus Awards in Shanghai and done some terrific stuff. So in that sense, yes. And having the show on, it broadcasts across the continent. It's got a lot of people watching and supporting. And then definitely, and by the same token, a lot of the events that I do where I MC doing events in Europe or in America or in Asia, those are great. And I think you have to acknowledge yourself that you've done well there. That's good. But you've got to do that without letting it overtake you and then let your ego go rampant. Yes, you've arrived to a point, but there's still more that I want to do. And you've got to ensure that, you know, we've done 13 seasons now, number 14 is on the way. Now 14 has to be better than 13 and 15 has to be better than 14. So you keep looking and pushing, oh, where do I improve myself? Where do I improve the quality of the show? And look at, as we go back, where was an episode where maybe we feel we didn't quite get it right or our guests didn't quite work and why was that? So not beating yourself up when things don't go too wrong, but also not going completely overboard when they do go right. Pat yourself on the back, because I think we can be a little hard on ourselves from time to time. And if you've been successful, then accept it and own it and be proud of it, but also use that to spur yourself on and say, right, well, I've done this and I'm very happy with it and I'm very proud of it, but there's still more that I want to do. So how do I do that? And how do I take the impetus of what I've done so far to help with the next step on my journey?
Do you ever revisit old episodes?
I go back and look fondly when I had slightly more hair. Look, the show has transformed. We spent the first four seasons in a different studio. After four seasons, we'd built up enough backing from our sponsors to be able to move into a studio on our own terms. So the product you see now, the lighting is slicker, the studio is slicker, the audience is put together. So in that sense, yes, you learn what people want to hear about and also what people on the show want to say. And it goes back to my point of tapping into people's passions. And I think I've learned most of all that it is the Dan Nicol show, but it's not really about Dan Nicol. And when the shows work best, it's when I take half a step back. And if you're watching the show sitting on your couch at home, you feel like you're sitting around a dining room table with three really well-known people who are just hanging out and having a great conversation, and you feel part of that. So that's probably the best lesson, realizing that my job is not to take center stage on the show. It's to bring the very best out of my three guests and to make sure that they work together as smoothly and effectively as they can. Because if they're having fun on the show and laughing and enjoying it and having a bit of banter, then if you're watching at home, you're going to enjoy it. If they're not enjoying being on my show, it's not going to make for great television. So that's probably been the greatest sense of my understanding as the show's progressed.
As a television presenter, you're responsible for introducing and interviewing guests, linking segments and holding the show together, which I believe needs a lot of preparation. With that, what does a typical day in your week look like? And do you have a routine that you follow religiously, or does it change from day to day?
Typical day usually starts with me trying to persuade my five-year-old son to eat his breakfast, not pour it over his head or throw it at his sister. The days change radically. We film the show on a Tuesday. If you watch the show, it goes out at the moment on a Thursday. You'll see at the end of the show, I will usually throw forward to the following week's guests because we try and confirm them in advance. But we had a great example with the final episode of season 13. Monday morning, ahead of a Tuesday evening recording, I had zero guests because all three of them had tested positive for COVID and they'd had to pull out. So Monday became a mad scramble, working my phone book. Who can we get on board? Who's available? Getting my team to put in a few calls as well. And thankfully, by Tuesday morning, we'd come up with three fantastic new guests who made for a brilliant closing show. But it was then into the research and working out who they are, why we want to talk to them, what we want to talk to them about. And then we don't have a script per se. I don't use a teleprompter and I don't use an earpiece. I'm also the executive producer of the show, and it is my space in entirety, but that means I have to get everything right and make sure that I know exactly what's happening. And so we have a running order when we're going to drop in a video of somebody or a photo, or we want some sort of visual reference that needs to be brought up on screen. So there's a lot of preparation there. And then it's also finding out stuff that's going to make for really interesting television. So I know Adrian is a great podcaster, but what else about him is going to get people interested and is going to get Adrian talking really excitedly? So that's the real secret to getting the show, just finding stuff. And quite often we'll have guys on the show, Dan, how did you know that? Where did you find that? And the internet is a beautiful thing for digging up information people probably don't want you to share. We're not an expose show. I'm never going to show stuff that puts you in a deeply uncomfortable position. I'll certainly embarrass you with an awkward photo of you as a four-year-old, but never stuff that's going to make you feel upset or angry. And so it's getting that sort of balance right. And then we'll often find, if I've got one of the cricketers on the show, one of the other cricketers will often phone and say, Dan, don't tell him that I told you this, but. And then we get a cool story that's a bit of fun and we have a bit of a laugh. So that's the real aim of it. And I do have a fantastic team. I've got a brilliant producer called Mias who makes magic. I don't know how he does it, but he does it brilliantly. Paula, who's our production manager, who spends her life shouting at me and telling me to do things I was supposed to do the week before, and Bridget, who runs all of our guests and gets them all in. It's a huge team and a great partner, Kelvin Watt, who I co-own the show with. So we all work together and to create this product. And the more work we put in, the more research we do, the more understanding we have of our guests, the better, smoother, more free-flowing that show is going to look when it finally hits air.
I remember I used to watch your shows with my dad, because my dad's also a big rugby fan. And on the complete other side, something that we spoke about briefly was wine tasting. And may you tell us a bit about what inspired your love for wine tasting?
So the wine show I have is fairly self-explanatory in its name. It's called Dan Really Likes Wine, which is not too hard to evaluate. When I got down to UCT, the degree I did, which was an honors degree in English, allowed a bit of time to get out and explore a bit. And one of the great things to do when you're down in the Cape is visit wine routes and wine estates. And so that was the initial introduction to it, but it was no more than this is a fun thing to do and a nice day out. Fast forward to post-university, I'd accepted a job offer to become the sports editor of the iAfrica.com website while I was also working with Cape Talk. So it was a very intense period of sports journalism where I learned a huge amount. But while I was at iAfrica, while I was being their sports editor, I was talking to the lifestyle editor and she was complaining that she just didn't have the time to get to all the gallery openings and restaurant launches and wine events she was being invited to. And a little bell went off. Well, I'm a young single guy working in journalism. The opportunity to go and have free meals and drink wine and go to cool events. This sounds like something I could do. So I very casually said to this lifestyle editor of ours that I'd be very happy to cover some of the events for her. And she asked me if I knew much about wine. And my response was to look and answer, yes, of course, a great deal. Of course, I knew nothing about it from a technical perspective. And she sent me off to do a wine event where I knew nothing, but realized that this was something I wanted to learn a lot about. So I did. I went to every event I could. I listened and I listened and I listened, something we're not always quite so good at doing these days. And I learned from winemakers and producers and other journalists. And it got to a stage where I started learning a bit more, started speaking at a couple of wine events. And in 2016, a guy called Michael Jordaan, who was the CEO of FNB and is now one of South Africa's top entrepreneurs and investors and involved in all manner of companies, approached me at a wine event I was hosting with the Cape Epic, the mountain bike event that I've worked on for the last 14 or 15 years. And I was hosting a wine evening based on wine I'd collected on the race. And he said to me, I need to show you a video. It was a video of an American guy, Casey Vaynerchuk, who he wanted to show me a wine show of from America. And he said, we need this show in South Africa. You need to do it. You're funnier than him and you know more about wine. You need to get it done. So Michael Jordaan telling you to start a business, telling you that you're well equipped to do it. I figured, right, well, he's clearly had a little too much Chardonnay. So I smiled politely and then walked off. And he phoned me the next day, the day after, and the day after that. Have you started your wine show? And so a week later, I knocked up some imagery, got my designers to put together a logo, put together a very basic set in my cellar at home. And we started filming Dan Really Likes Wine as what I figured would probably be a mildly indulgent, very small project that wouldn't last long, but I'd get to drink some nice wine and that would be about it. So that was November 2016. Now, 4.5 years later, the show is sponsored by Pick and Pay. It broadcasts live twice a week. We do live wine events at launches around the country, have international wine guests on, and it's become a complete business in its own right. And it's taken me by surprise. I certainly wasn't expecting it to get where it has, but it spoke to the need for somebody to talk about wine in a manner that was a bit more engaging, a little less threatening and intimidating, because the language of wine can be quite exclusionary. And it's allowed me to have a great deal of fun drinking amazing wine and supporting a terrific, primarily South African industry. And having a lot of fun with it.
Everything you really touch turns into gold.
No, not always. I had a clothing business and I had a golf magazine, neither of which lasted for too long. It's something you learn, especially from guests on the Dan Nichols Show, that everybody, with almost no exception, has had the project that's failed, has had the job that hasn't worked out, has had the dream that has been brought down to earth very quickly. And that's where you learn so many of the lessons. And if I look at when we first started to try and get the Dan Nichols Show up and running, and I figured, right, well, here we go. I'm going to be massive. This is huge. This cannot fail. And it did, because at first, because I just didn't understand what I was getting myself into. That's how the commercial side of it worked, how you needed to bring in sponsors, how you needed to pitch to a television channel, how you needed to understand how all of that process worked. I had a BA in English. If you wanted me to talk to you about postmodernism and feminism in novels, I could chat to you quite happily about it. How to pitch a television show and make it work, I had no clue. But I learned from that. And that really is, it's where you get your learnings. You get your joy from your success. But you get so much of what you learn from when it doesn't go so well. And it's really important to take that on board and not to beat yourself up and go and sit in a dark corner and phone your mum in tears, but go, right, well, this hasn't worked. Why hasn't it worked? Is it never going to work? Or is it something that I need to tweak? Or what lessons can I take from it?
As an altruistic influencer and role model to many people, what advice would you give anyone trying to pursue a similar career path?
Ooh, you've got to be good at convincing your parents that what you're doing is sensible. there are a number of things. You've got to have a passion for what you're doing. You've got to understand why you want to do it. You've got to find something that is going to pay your bills and look after you. So looking at the financial consideration of what you're doing isn't something to totally throw out the window, but you'll be driven ultimately by what really gives you a warm and fuzzy feeling, what you really do have that passion about. Because if you're trying to start a business or you're trying to begin at the bottom end of the food chain when you're getting into a particular industry, you're going to have long hours. You're not going to have a huge amount of reward. And if you're not passionate about why you're taking the time to invest in getting to what you hope is your end point, it's going to be really hard to get there. And that speaks to any of your regular name entrepreneurs that come up, whether it's an Elon Musk or a Richard Branson or any of these guys who've done staggeringly well. But there are millions of people around the world who their business plan hasn't necessarily been to fly commercial rockets to the moon. It might have been, I want to have a plumbing business, but I just know how I want to have that plumbing business and I want to make it work. So having that aim, having that dream, it doesn't have to always be that let's change the world, let's create a brand new industry, let's do something that is going to absolutely shake the known world. It can simply be, I'm quite passionate about music and I'd like to open my music store and this is the hard work I'm going to put in to make it work. Whatever you're doing, that combination of passion and hard work makes for a pretty solid platform.
That's really true. The last question that I'll ask is, in every podcast I have a signature question, which is, what does happiness mean to you? So today, Mr. Dan Nicol, may you tell us a bit about what happiness means to you?
I think for many people, not just myself, happiness has probably been redefined quite significantly over the last 18 months as the world has turned on its head and become a very strange place. At one point, I was on between 100 and 150 flights a year. I was hosting events all over the world, and I genuinely loved it. But what it did mean was that I was away from home a lot, and I've got a young family. And so I think of where I am now, there have been elements in admittedly a very tough last stretch that have been genuinely happy. As I've sat at home with my wife and kids and we've mucked about in the garden and put together puzzles and built Lego and cleaned spaghetti off the curtains and do the things that being a parent and a young family involved. To sum it up in one word, probably a word I often use when I'm talking to winemakers about getting a particular wine just right. And that word is balance. And balance, I think I didn't always have. I was charging off one plane, onto another, onto a stage, behind a camera, in front of a camera. And life got quite manic. And I certainly enjoyed it and I got a lot out of it. It was very rewarding. It allowed a lot to build a lot of my brand and my personality and who I am. But I think going forward, it's, you know, yes, you're filming a couple of television shows, but you're also having time to bowl to your daughter in the garden or having some friends or family over for a really good meal. And there are going to be times when the days aren't so good and you've got to work flat out or a business pitch falls flat or somebody falls ill and it's the nature of the world. But if that's balanced out by time that is a lot more enjoyable and a lot more relaxed, then I think you're in a pretty good place.
I think that's really good to find a balance with all aspects of your life. So even though you have your show, to also make time for your kids and to not neglect your kids or your wife and to also make time to be on your show. With that, I'll just really like to say thank you so much, sir, for joining us on The Morning News today. It was an absolute honor speaking to you, and I wish you the best in all aspects of your life.
Thank you, Adrian. I really appreciate it. Good luck going forward. I suspect we're going to be hearing a lot more from you and about you in years to come.
Thank you.
Thank you guys for listening. I hope you enjoy it.